Today's the final in our Dig Deep conversation on journalism with our liberal commentator Aaron Brown and conservative Chuck Marone. Through the week, they've talked about the history of journalism and how the business model was drastically changed and the effect of consolidation on local journalism. Today, we begin the conversation with optimism from Chuck on the future of journalism. You're listening to Dig Deep on Northern Community Radio. Joining me, Aaron Brown from Minnesota Brown from Strong Towns, Chuck Marone. This is our third installment of Dig Deep on journalism.
Oh, yeah. I was just raising
you
my
ready
hand.
To go, yes, I sir, wanna, I'm going to call on you.
I'm so anxious to yes. do this segment.
Yeah, so now we're going to talk about the future of journalism and how we consume news and journalism. Where do we want to begin, Chuck?
I am optimistic about the future just in general, but I think when we talk about newspapers, I think that what we're seeing is a business model die, and that is creates all kinds of opportunities for other things to take its place. Newspapers today are caught between two worlds. They have to continue to produce a newspaper. That is a huge, like, legacy overhead cost. The cost of printing, the cost of distribution, all of that requires them to meet, like, a certain level of number of pages, number of ads that drive the way that they can cover news. What we are starting to see is papers around the country, and it's in larger markets. It's not gotten to small towns yet, where they've gone to Sunday only. So you get digital all week and then one Sunday newspaper, or even eliminate the print version completely and go just 100% digital. And what happens when you do that is that it frees up all kinds of resources. It changes your business model. It's a fundamental change of it. And it allows you to essentially reinvest in journalism and producing good stories instead of the printing and the distribution. That's a scary jump because there's no natural, like, takeoff point, and there's no natural landing point. There just is, like, one phase and another phase. It's a little like your ice or your water. But you can't exist in between the two, and when you try to, it just decimates you. It doesn't work. You have to be one or the other. And I think as time goes on, what we see are more and more kind of competing voices starting at that very low end. And yes, some of them are hyper-partisan. Many of them are. Some of them are hateful. Some of them are disgusting. But some of them are beautiful. And some of them have, like, amazingly insightful things to say. And I'll just give props to my colleague here, Aaron. When we're starting to get into election time and I want to actually understand what's going on, I always go to Minnesota Brown. And I always read, like, okay, what's going on in the 8th District? Like, what's the buzz? What's the word? What's going on in this precinct and that? So there's people who I think in the past would have been one part of a larger operation are now essentially doing this on their own out of passion. And a lot of that is really, I think, beautiful. And when you can unearth it and bring it to the surface, it gets wider readership, it gets wider distribution, it gets more credibility, and I think fills in those missing voices that we nostalgize about the Walter Cronkite era.
We live in a time where people are really talking about a lot of dystopian future myth. We love our dystopian novels and our dystopian TV shows and our dystopian movies. So you're asked, what happens if this dystopian future, if there's no power and there's no internet and everything just reverts to a crude base living? What would you do, Mr. Modern Person? And honestly, on a bad night, I've shopped and I've looked for a manual printing press, because you want to ask me what I would do is I would get a manual printing press and I'd put it in my garage and I'd make a newspaper and I'd press the damn wood myself into paper, because I live in the woods, and I'd make, even if I only made one, I would make a newspaper and I would bring it to town and I'd probably make money. That's probably how I could make money, is if all of those things happened.
There would be a market. I mean, yeah. I think that there's no doubt that, I mean, you can go back as far as you want and in the most, you know, desperate societies, and they had this type of thing.
But that's the point, is that the demand is there. the thirst for knowledge that humans have is there. And people who can understand what's going on are always valuable. Every society has valued these people who understand things because they help the society thrive. To get to understand things, you just have to ask questions. You just have to learn. That's what journalism is to me. That's the person who learns things and shares it with people. That's the job. And so all of that being the case, the challenge we've got is right now, as Chuck mentioned the word passion. That's my chief income, is passion. I am a former journalist. I view a journalist as someone who is paid professionally to do a lot of question asking. And I consider myself more of a writer who has roots in journalism, because I don't make a lot of money through my blog. Is not a money maker. It's something I do. It helped me sell a book when I had a book out. I might have another book someday. And I use it because it's created a community that I love and that has benefited me professionally in other ways. But I just love doing it. And I would, like I said, do it if I had to use my own blood in some pressed papyrus that I found somewhere. But that's my problem, not anybody else's problem. That's my passion and what I'm interested in. I think getting this to a working model is the question. As Chuck said, the newspapers are dying. I mean, whatever you want to call it, newspapers will tell you, no, we're not dying. We're great. We feel wonderful. But the reality is, whatever emerges, some of these organizations might survive, but the old newspaper model was dying even back in 2000 when I was working there, 2001 when I was editor of the newspaper. I remember I later in my run in 2003, I think, I wrote, because I'd been going to all these meetings, all these these consolidation of these media operations, I was seeing it happen right in front of me. And I remember writing it was an editorial about media consolidation. The only real way that these trends can reverse is for a lot of these big media companies to go totally bankrupt.
Right.
It's the only way. Right. And not just bankrupt, but like stone dead bankrupt. Like, these newspapers have to stop publishing so that other entrepreneurs can come forward with a model that works.
Right.
Because all of the debt that was poured into these media companies to get bigger and bigger and bigger,
it's not serviceable.
You can't pay it back, and you can't make any money at it. Mm-hmm. Now, you could make money if the newspaper in a small town went away and a group of people raised some money to bring in a printing press or a digital team or some new model that was based on the actual market and what people were willing to pay. Because the other problem is advertising rates have gotten so high, again, for the same reason. They're not only squeezing their staff to be smaller, but they're squeezing their ad rates to be higher. So they're squeezing their customers, essentially, to pay what frankly, I'm looking at local newspaper ad rates, because I've been in things where I've had to buy ads. I just don't, for what I know that the reach is, now that the market is so flush with media options, I just don't know why people are paying those prices, other than tradition and the fact that there's probably some negligible benefit. But it would be better for the consumer, both the advertiser and the customer who reads the newspaper, to have a new model. But we're not there yet, because the old model simply doesn't want to die, as you would expect.
Yeah, I totally agree with Aaron. The debt's not serviceable on these things. And so what happens is that they linger on. And the fact that they linger on, like, sucks some of the air out of the room and stifles competition. That competition's coming. And I mean, I can really see, like, we're sitting in Grand Rapids today. I can see a very viable business model for a four-person newspaper company, all completely digital online, to do fantastic reporting on a tiny, tiny budget. You know, minimal ads, a little bit of classified, maybe a donor or two, a benefactor in the community supporting them. I think that is a viable model. I want to focus on the opposite end of the model as a way to illuminate the local. Because what is the one national story now today? It's Donald Trump. Everything centers around Donald Trump for the last 24 months, really. You can't turn on any news media at all, from my local paper to CNN, without getting inundated within 15 minutes with Donald Trump. That is for one reason and one reason only. It attracts eyeballs. It keeps people watching. It is a circus atmosphere that locks people in. We've gotten to the point in the consolidation game that there's so few players and there's so few playbooks to win that we actually have almost like one-size-fits-all journalism. I've argued for a long time. I feel like the media made Donald, the media made this. There's people with a bunch of different, to me, the media made Donald Trump possible because it's their dying business model that said, we have to somehow compete with Facebook and mm-hmm. YouTube and everything. We've got to have a bigger circus than their circus.
I did have the thought, and this kind of feeds into that same theory, is if you, not just the last election, which where it was very painfully obvious, but the most, several of the most recent elections, typically the more interesting candidate wins.
Right.
The more ratings friendly, the more likely to attract a lot of attention, to get people to actually watch the press conference start to finish. And it has less to do with a partisan identity, less to do with the competence or qualitative values of that particular candidate, but the more interesting candidate wins. Trump was more interesting than Clinton, and Obama was more interesting than his opponents, and Bush was more interesting than his opponents. And that just seems to me to be kind of what this media model gets you when you have a smaller number of gatekeepers, essentially, controlling what most people see. They're going to show you the things that are good for ratings. Like people, I watch the Good Morning America and this Today Show, but we watch Good Morning America because my wife is fiercely loyal to it. And I watch this show and people say, oh, the media has a liberal bias or the media has this kind of bias. And I watch the show like that or CNN or most networks. And I say the media has a bias, all right. It's a stupid bias.
Yes.
Media has a stupid bias. And they're going to float all kinds of things to get you to watch past the next commercial break. They're going to take a study. They're going to tell you one day that coffee will kill you. They'll tell you the next day you need to drink 3 cups or you're going to die. And they're going to keep doing this until just to keep us watching the darn thing. So that's the bias of our media. It's stupid.
Here's the local analog, though, and this is why I have hope. You know, Aaron says the people who have won the last few elections have been interesting people. I agree with that observation. I think that it is, you know, a prerequisite now to be a national media sensation in order to get the time you need to gain the traction to win. Here's the thing. Our cities are full of interesting people. Our local areas are full of just fascinating, interesting people with great ideas and great things that they're trying to do and lots of passion. And as soon as local people, local journalists can switch back to start focusing on that again, I think there's an infinite number of stories to tell. There's an infinite number of angles to get into. And the thing is that people are dying to be part of it. I think today more than any time in my like short life, I feel like the people around me are desperate for local connections. We have had our entire dialogue centralized and nationalized in a way that makes us all feel just kind of icky, right? Like I'm part of this now national conversation. I don't like it, but I'm not able to check out of it because everywhere I look, I get my local paper. It's on the front page. I log into Facebook. All my friends are talking about it. Everybody is. I think that if we have local journalists again in a different model that actually could start talking about the history of that abandoned school and why we're looking at opening a new one, yet we have this building that's empty, you know, the history of the last bond referendum and why it didn't pass and who the characters were. And let's bring one of those back. And you know what? Today in journalism, not only can we write about it, but we can actually sit there and interview them and show that video on. And it's not going to be cut like CNN. It's going to be a little rough, but you know what? A couple hundred people will sit and watch an hour and a half interview with some old guy talking about the school because you know what? It's kind of interesting. These are the things that we can do at really low cost because of all these tools we have now that are fascinating. And when you do them, people watch, people participate, you can make money doing it. Aaron and I are kind of hacks at this model. Maybe I've become a little bit more sophisticated in the way that I do it at Strong Towns. But I mean, this is essentially...
He has a staff. I want to point that out.
I do have a staff now. But I mean, essentially, we tell stories. And, you know, we have a point of view. We're advocacy journalism. We're trying to change people's opinions about things. But you have to have credibility when you do that. You have to have respectability. You can't be just a flamethrower. You gotta approach it as a reasonable human being. I think that the cost to entry for local journalism has never been lower. Has never been lower. You can literally get started with nothing. It's never been lower. I think we're just like on the cusp of an explosion of really, really good stuff.
Well, I think we're almost out of time, and I did want to ask you guys, though, we didn't get into fake news, which I think is fine, but I do want to know, actually, yeah. I'm very interested in how you consume news or what sources you go to in a day.
Yeah. I, of course, start every day listening to this radio station, Northern Community Radio. I'm not just saying that, but, of course, one of the reasons I fell into being involved with this station was the fact that I tune around your dial and you listen for what's relevant to you. And I like local news, and I like knowing what's going on in my broader community, not just the people around me, but the few towns over and what's going on for them and what's the same and what's different. So whether it's an independent public station like this, which not every community has access to, but this is a big source of local news for me. As much as we just trashed newspapers, I still, despite their flaws, read my local newspapers, all of them. I subscribe to the Hibbing Daily Tribune, which, disclosure, still runs my column. I technically, I guess I'm an independent contractor for them, but I read the Grand Rapids Herald Review and I read the Mesabi Daily News. Even though it gives me fits, I'll read it because I want to read what people are reading and know how it's being reported. The Duluth News Tribune, I read those newspapers. But I think if you want to know who I trust, the people I've met and know, and so these are names that people at the station might know, but obviously Marshall Helmberger and the Timber Jay, which he's got his biases, but I think he does a great job of having a local voice and a consistent, curious process to finding information.
He's transparent about what
he's doing.
Yeah,
every bias he has, you know about, and similarly, a friend of mine, Beth Biley, and the Scenic Range News Forum, she and her partner, her business partner, Ron Brochu, own that paper and the Business North down in Duluth, which I think is another great, very interesting publication. It's a niche thing for the business community, but does a great job of reporting on the goings-on of the local economic institutions and the business community. And so those are people that have local ownership and have taken the time to really get to know their subject matter. Those are the kinds of outfits that I will listen to. And I do appreciate there are some, I hazard not to say their names on these airwaves, but some commercial stations still have news operations and some local operations. If I'm going to listen to something on commercial radio, that's what I'm going to listen to. But I value that local information. And then nationally, and statewide, I go to the people who spend time with the sources. You know, you go to as close to the primary sources as you can get. So I'm interested in the Minnesota's political coverage, where I know those reporters are down there at the Capitol talking to the members of the legislature and understanding what's going on. Rachel Stassenberger just got bought out from the Pioneer Press yesterday. And I just want to point her out as an example of a fantastic political reporter who's now looking for work. But that's the kind of person that I want to read my political news from. Go ahead, Chuck.
What I've done is I recognize that the national news cycle is just unhealthy for me. yeah. The speed, the craziness, Tom Petty's dead. No, he's not dead. Yes, he's in a coma. No, he is dead. It's like, I don't need that. If I find out 4 days later that Tom Petty had passed away, that it's still news, and that's a just fine pace for me. So what I have done is I have intentionally created buffers in my life to slow down and parse my intake of news. I get most of my stuff curated from either a very finely curated Facebook feed. In other words, I've gone through, and I think a lot of people maybe don't recognize this, but you can tell Facebook, like, don't give me any more stuff from this person, because this person just sends like crazy partisan hack stuff. I feel like I have a Facebook feed full of really intelligent people. Now, I did a thing a while back, because I'm very interested in this, where it said, you know, where on the political spectrum is your network of friends that you're getting? Mine was 85% on the left. And so to me, I feel like, okay, I'm getting perspectives that challenge my thinking regularly from people who I think are smart and I respect. I like that. I have my own like RSS feed reader where I've got probably 50, 60 blogs in there, including Aaron's blog, where I will get a curated list of things and I'll choose from that the stuff I want to read. I do check the Star Tribune every day. I do that largely to keep track of the twins, but I do read the other articles. I'm interested in the conversation politics at the state level. I read the Brainerd Daily Dispatch. It arrives at my house every morning. My wife reads it. It's always sitting there. In terms of like national news, I read The Economist. I actually find that American news curated through European eyes is a really healthy way to look at our system. I read The Guardian if I'm gonna read like a more breaking news kind of thing, because The Economist is always on like a week delay, but that's fine with me. I'm good with it. And then I listen to a ton of podcasts. I listen to a lot of, if I'm gonna get news or opinion, it's gonna come through a podcast format. I go for a lot of long walks and listen to people talk about stuff. I find that to be a really healthy way to get news, as opposed to have it like, you know, slammed in your face.
Well, we'd love to have you weigh in on this. Please send us an email, comments@kaxe.org. We may have to do part two of journalism, but we'll see.
We didn't get to fake news.
I know. That's all right. Chuck Marone, our conservative commentator from Strong Towns, and from Minnesota Brown, our liberal commentator, Aaron Brown. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
What do you think? What are the news sources you trust? Email comments@kaxe.org. You can hear Dig Deep on our website, kaxe.org, and find out how to sign up for the podcast there as well.